What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, three-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now it's time for Madden's Post, live from Madden's Post at Gallagher Way, starring Cubs manager Joe Madden and your host from Cubs Radio, Ron Coomer, on Sports Radio 670 The Score, official radio home of the Cubs, a radio.com sports station.
Welcome to Madden's Post, show number 4. Thank you for being here. I'm Ron Coomer. And we are here. We've got a great show today. We have got some Hall of Famers. We've got some center fielders, some pitchers, some Cy Young, some guys that have had great history with the Cubs. Obviously, Joe will be here in just a minute. And we got the great Johnny Vincent, who sang today the national anthem. We all appreciate you guys being here. Unfortunately, today was a rough day, 2-0, right, against the Brew Crew. But you know what? We won 4 in a row. We lost. We got a chance to win a series tomorrow, and that is the main thing. But the post show is not all about baseball. It's about a little music. It's about fun. It's going to be stories tonight. We have quite a few of the 1984 Chicago Cubs will be in the house today. But before we get started with the skipper getting here and the guys down here, we have one of my great friends, Johnny Vincent, who sang the national anthem earlier today. Is there any anthem that is more unique, better than Johnny Vincent? Outstanding. Today, now up in the broadcast booth, we are all up there, and all the Milwaukee guys and the Cubs broadcasters, everybody's got the phone out, and they're timing the note.
And they're like, when is that fat guy going to
show up? No. We're just worried that you're not going to fall over. That's the bottom line. That's it. But has anybody ever told you the longest you've ever held the note?
I'm not sure.
Well, Johnny and I have gone back a long way. We were friends on the south side of Chicago. We grew up in the same neighborhood, and his sister was in my grade school class. But Johnny and I have been friends, and we are privileged. Last week, Johnny was in Vail, Colorado. With?
Doing his show for the Scientific Summit for the Stedman Clinic, NASA, and Mayo Clinic. So got
so
to sing out there.
So he was hobnobbing with all the big shots, and now he's back. We got him back. So to kick off the show, as always.
I thought we'd do, hey, it's a loss. It's okay. We're going to get the series tomorrow. I thought we'd do That's Life by Frank Sinatra.
I love it.
How's that? Is that okay? All right. Let's hear it. Let's start up the orchestra. Sing along, guys. Have a drink. Have fun and sing along. That's life.
That's life.
That's what all the people say. You're riding high in April, shot down in May. But I know I'm gonna change that tune. When I'm back on top in June, I say that's life. And as funny as it may seem, some people get their kicks stomping on a dream. But I won't let it get me down. 'Cause this final world keeps spinning round and round. I've been a puppet, a pauper, a pirate, a poet, a pawn and a king. I've been up and down and over and out. And I know one thing. Each time I find myself flat on my face, I pick myself up and get back in a race. Oh, that's life. I can't deny it. Thought of quitting, baby, But my heart ain't gonna buy it. But if you give me one little old try, I jump right on that big bird and then I fly. I've been a puppet, a pauper, a pirate, a poet, a pawn and a king. I've been up and down and over and out, and I know one thing. Each time I find myself flat on my face, I pick myself up and get back in the pennant race. Oh, that's life. And I can't deny it. Many times I thought of cutting out, but my heart won't buy it. If you give me one little old try, I'm gonna roll myself up in a big ball and die. My.
Oh, thank you very much. You're too kind. Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
What do you think about Johnny Vincent?
Sounds a lot better when you're drinking.
We are on the score 670, and, you know, we've been friends a long time, and, you know, where we grew up on the south side of Chicago, we're just a, you know, little neighborhood on the south side.
Yeah, that's it.
Where do you start singing where we're from, and all of a sudden it turns into this?
Very, very lucky, and I'm stupid, and I kind of fell into
Where's
it.
Where's the story? I want to hear the story.
I started singing after I played pro football in Germany. I came back. I worked as a recruiter in accounting and finance. My sister said, why don't you try singing? Started messing around. Coach Ditka heard me. He gave me a deal, and I've been there since 2001. Cubs, and since with the Cubs, yep, since 2003.
So when you were a kid in our neighborhood, there, you know, I know your dad sings. He sang with you many times.
My dad should have been a professional opera singer. Yeah, he's 84 years old now, and he can still sing. But born and raised in Italy, he has the voice.
So when you're having Thanksgiving dinner in our neighborhood, and you're having Christmas dinner, and you got a bunch of family members that can sing.
There's 50 of us in those little bungalows.
We all
slammed in there.
We'd all go in there.
We were
all in the same
neighborhood. It was the best times. It was awesome.
You had to fight for a chair around the table, didn't you?
Well, I usually broke a chair when I sat down because I was eating so much.
What was the first time you sang at a family function or something like that, and you went, wow, this sounds pretty good, even for yourself?
I'll be honest with you. I hate my voice to this day. No joke. But I remember singing Five Golden Rings at my nonna, my grandmother and grandfather's house on Monitor, on 63rd and 62nd and Monitor. And all of us cousins had our part in mind. It was Five Golden Rings for, you know, that thing.
And then that was it.
And that was, well, I never thought about it again until I was like 29 years old. And then that's when I started.
When did the Frank Sinatra thing come into play?
I saw him at the United Center in 1993, and that's when I kind of fell in love with his voice and everything.
Because even my partner, great Pat Hughes, who one day we hope is going to be in the Hall of Fame,
yes,
and here very soon. You know, Pat is a big music guy. We talk a lot about music on the broadcast, definitely before, and we know the Skipper is a big music guy. But,
yep,
you know, there has to come a time where you, like, I like Frank Sinatra.
Yeah.
But when I started singing Frank Sinatra, it didn't sound like that. When's the first time you sang it in a crowd or in a family setting and you went, oh, my.
Southside, at a Southside bar, I did some karaoke, and I think I sang New York, New York or something like that. And somebody said, hey, you kind of sound like him. So that was back late 90s. But I didn't do anything with it until, like I said, 2001, and jumped in and got lucky with Coach Ditka.
Incredible. And you've been at Mike Ditka's restaurant for how long?
Going to go on 19, almost 20 years now.
And now the national anthem with the Chicago Cubs in this stretch,
yep,
the first time you did it was?
2003. Larry Rothschild, you, yep, and a couple of the other players came in, and that's when I started doing it.
And now, can you tell us the story about the national anthem for game of the World Series? What game was it?
Game four. That was four. I sang and we lost. Game. My favorite game of all time is game six against the Dodgers to win and go to the World Series. That was the best game I've ever seen in my life.
Experience. So when you sing, you know, when you're singing for the playoffs in the World Series, it's a pretty big deal. And, you know, for some people, there's a lot of interaction, and the Twitter thing blows up. The Twitter thing blew up for you one of those nights, and you had every musical celebrity tweeting about your anthem.
Well, I got lucky because people want celebrities to sing the anthem for the NLCS and for the World Series, and I'm not a celebrity by any means. I'm nobody.
No,
and
you're a celebrity.
No. Seriously, the Cubs organization gave me a chance.
Yeah,
that's what it was. You know, Max Berman, Jim Obojkovic, you know, Mr. Kenny and Mr. Ricketts, they gave me that chance. And Major League Baseball did not want me to sing the anthem. They wanted a big celebrity to do it, but the Cubs did that, and I'll never forget it. And they're the greatest guys you'll ever meet. So I'm. Give all my credit to them.
What do you think, guys? Should we do one more song before other guys on here?
How about some My Kind of Town, Chicago, and then you could shut me up and you guys could have fun.
My Kind of Town, boys, can we crank her up?
You got to sing it with me, Ronnie.
I'll give it a little bit. I'll move the mic, though.
Do you know the first few words? You can talk the first part. It's talking. It's really easy. Now this, right? Now, this could only happen to a guy like me, and only happen in a town like this. So may I say to each of you most gratefully, as I throw each one of you a kiss, this is my kind of town, Chicago. Yes, my kind of town, Chicago.
Yes,
my kind of people too. People who smile at you, and each time I roam, Chicago is calling me home. Chicago is why I just grin like a clown. It's my kind of town. Chicago Cubbies, Chicago is one town that won't let you down. It's my kind of town. Thank you.
Does it get any better than that?
Yeah, it gets a lot better than that. That's not that great.
No, that was outstanding. We are here at Madden's Post for the post-post game. Joe is on his way. You are listening to the score 670. We are at the corner of Clark and Waveland. We are about to take a break. Coming up next, we will have the skipper, and we will have Hall of Famers. We'll have center fielders and a Cy Young all joining us here soon. You're listening to The Score 670.
What up, y'all? It's your boy, Danny Green, three-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host, Harrison Sanford, on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
To Madden's Post, live from Madden's Post at Gallagher Way, starring Cubs manager Joe Madden and your host Ron Coomer on Sports Radio 670 The Score, official radio home of the Cubs, a radio.com sports station.
Welcome back. We are here at Madden's Post, show number 4. And let's give a little plug, first of all, to the restaurant, Tara, the staff. So if you come here, There's some beverages that have been consumed here that everybody kind of, you know, the try not to suck beer is a big hit, and we are here on Clark and Waveland. The house cab is a skipper's favorite, I might say. The food is outstanding. All the service, everybody's been great to us. And if you get a chance, check out the Flamingo Room because it is pretty cool. It's a little busy right now, I think, with some guys that have hit or thrown baseballs that'll be down here in a minute. But we are here with Johnny Vincent, the skipper, I have been told, is on his way. So we are close to being ready to roll with the skipper and our 1984 Chicago Cubs, which one of those members includes a Hall of Famer.
Yes.
And tomorrow's his day here at Wrigley Field.
Yeah.
1984 Chicago Cubs. I remember being in this neighborhood. Actually, I was in the south suburbs when Jody Davis caught Sutt's pitch to finish the season and in Pittsburgh. And then they flashed to the neighborhood right here, and all you saw were people everywhere. And, you know, Jeff Schultz, my one buddy,
we were
sitting there. We were seniors in high school, and we said, we got to go there. And we stayed here all night and bounced around the neighborhood. We were 17 years old. My mom was crazy, wondering where the heck I was. And we stayed here all night in the neighborhood, and she couldn't ground me because we won, right? You couldn't ground me. Do you remember where you were when the Cubs won in 84?
I remember watching it at home, and then I actually remember being in Wentworth Park when whole, you know, at the end of it all, and that was just like, because we killed them the first two games.
Right.
We were like, but that second game was 15-something, wasn't it?
Game one, Sutt, who will be here in a minute, hit the big home run.
Yep.
On the street.
Big red, yeah.
Sheffield, yeah.
Yeah, and it was just, it was a magical year, a magical season, and it didn't have the outcome we want, but that just made 2016 so much sweeter.
2016, we always talk about 2016 whenever we get a chance. Where were you 2016 Game 7 of the World Series?
Really drunk in this stadium. In this stadium.
Really?
Yeah.
In Wrigley Field?
In Wrigley. Yeah, I was actually passing through Cleveland that day. No joke. Came here, went to the Captain Morgan's Club, kind of was off to the side, and I drank a bunch of Jack Daniels. There's a skip.
I don't know if anybody on air can understand this, but the skipper has just showed up. Skipper, we've got a little. You are right here, absolutely. Here. I know we're on live radio, but you know what? This is what the show's all about. Joe is coming in. Right now.
Sure.
Ladies and gentlemen, for everybody listening at home, and everybody knows that's here, the skipper, Joe Madden.
Okay, I'm going to sell something now. that one's too good. You might remember from last year we did the paintings. Do y'all remember that? I don't think they got publicized enough, so I want to bring some stuff back and hopefully possibly sell it here during the course of the year. Let me show you right now. This is how this other one started. Hold that up, Joni. And this is the final product. So what I did is I designed this.
You mean all it?
Yeah, please.
There you go. I can multitask.
Yeah,
I
designed this for
we're good at this. Yeah,
for our artist in Florida. His name is Jason Skelton. He's I went to a mall down there and I walked into this clothing shop and there was a painting on the wall that I loved about the Mona Lisa. So anyway, it gave me ideas. So this is something I wanted to do since I was with the Rays. I thought it'd be a great off-season campaign to do, putting the art back into baseball, putting the art back into the game. So this was like number 6 or 7, and this is my one tribute to Mad Magazine, Spy versus Spy. I always loved them as a kid growing up. And all this stuff that's my handwriting, I downloaded, of course, some of these graphics, and then this is my version of a cell phone. But the point of this one is tell me what you think, not what you've heard, and then how about some noise reduction, because I really don't like cell phones. And I particularly don't like cell phone cameras, okay? So on that, I took each number and created or indicated something, a phrase, a thought, a word that I really don't think has any business in a baseball clubhouse. So number one is the phrase, my bad. I hate when somebody says my bad. It's a watered-down version of saying I screwed up. Okay, number two would be redundancy. Uncle Eddie, my uncle, really... Redundancy drives me crazy. Number three, conventional wisdom. I've thrown that out years ago. Number four is doubt. Number five is selfishness. Six is negativity. Seven, whatever your pet peeve is, throw it in there. Number eight, something that's always been done that way. And number 10 would be victim's complex. Those with victim's complex in clubhouses drive me insane. It's always, woe is me.
The poor me syndrome?
Oh, my God. It drives you absolutely insane. Anyway, that's how it began, and then it turned into this. So we had the artist.
I don't quite have the look to walk around like Vanna, you know,
no,
show.
Yeah, stand out there, ready.
we got to have somebody that's better looking than me to
But
do.
It's the final product. So Jason took my thoughts like that and created this. So we had an
Come
artist.
On.
We There you go. We had an artist do the Albert E. Newman version of me. And again, yeah, so it's our version of Mad Magazine. And on the bottom to the right, I think it is, you'll see that little...
Show it to Joe.
The barcode on the bottom. That's a tribute to Jay. April 30th would be her birthday. So we included Jay on that somehow. And also the hand in there is from Sister Suzanne in 7th grade. Sister Suzanne, so whenever you point your finger at somebody, there's three others pointing back at you. So I try to include... all these different concepts in this painting, and that's all represented in this What Me Hurry, What Me Worry on the top. That's a phrase from back in the day with Mad Magazine. So anyway, that's the final product. Anything else on there? We're blowing up launch angle. Launch angle is number 9. Me and Kevin Euclid wanted to blow that up last year, and also the phrase, there you go, you know, and I know, trying to blow all that up. So these are going to be available. I'm going to figure out how on demand, but this is one of the paintings from last year, and it's hard to trump these guys walking in there right now. Brother, how you doing, man? Gentlemen,
well,
go ahead.
We first of all, let's conclude with the paintings.
Yeah, one more.
What we want to do is explain this, because this is the one that needs to go in Coombs Corner, first of all.
And this,
that one will. But tell us about that one, because that one's extremely unique.
So that's one of 9 paintings. It's available on corkbaseball.com or maddenart.com. This one is the 7th game of the World Series. So that was the card that was in my back pocket. It has all the pregame notes and all the changes that were made during the game. And all this stuff is available, and I'm going to get it out there soon. I want you, if people want to buy it, it's great for the den. It's great for up on the wall. So it's great for your bar. But that is the 7th game card that I had in my back. It's been reproduced, blown up on that large piece of metal. And we'll get all that information here at Madden's Post soon, because it's going to go through maddenart.com and corkbaseball.com.
And people will be able to get that right here at the restaurant, or at least bid on it, or
not even
order?
Bid on it. You could order it. The whole thing
great.
Is we just got to get the we got to get it in order regarding like the pamphlets or how to do it, because we don't have like a big inventory here, but it'll be in your house between 3 and 5 days. Our guy's really good. So it's that one and all the others. I'm trying to be quick about this because these guys are right here. But maddenart.com and Quirk Baseball, and even this jacket. I want to get this jacket out here that has a cumulative of all our paintings last year in the middle of this jacket, and that's through Quirk Baseball. NFL.com, and I'll slow down.
That's the skipper, Joe Madden. I'm Ron Coomer. We are at Madden's Post for everybody listening on the score. And, Joe, as always, we have special guests here at your show here at the restaurant. Would you like to introduce some of the Hall of Fame Cy Young types that we just entered the room? And one newbie.
Yeah.
As the HOL.
Hey, where's my mic? Where's my
phone? Where's your holder? We need a holder there for Lee, please.
With hands that big, you can hold the mic.
Yeah, nice. Okay, good.
Well, this is really a treat for us. We knew the guys were coming into town today, so we got together and tried to get them all here, which we did. From down in farthest away from me, of course. What do we got? You're missing that.
You're good.
Farthest away from me, here is Mr. Rick Sutcliffe. I didn't even realize you were 16-1 one year. I saw your stats, man. That was pretty solid.
Come on, he didn't tell you that.
He told
before.
Me that. I probably forgot. That was pretty good.
Cool. I got to ask you something. What are you and I doing here? There's three Hall of Famers here.
Somebody had to open the show and close the show, and we got a singer who's really good. So,
well, Joe,
that's
Joe,
why I'm here. I'm
Joe
here
knows,
to have a try not to suck here. What about you?
You open it. Joe knows I'm going to close the bar before we leave.
Well, we got a couple closers here, actually. Sitting next to your left, this former teammate of mine had the pleasure of working with him with the, I think we were still the California Angels at that time. Newly elected member of the Hall of Fame, Mr. Lee Smith.
Thank you,
Lee Arthur. And now tomorrow at Wrigley Field, before the ball game, will be Lee Arthur Smith Day at Wrigley Field. Congrats, Lee.
Thank you, Coomer. Appreciate it, man. Thank you. Thank you.
Sitting next to him, I'd never had a chance to really work with this gentleman, but obviously from a distance really respected his work. Saw him on the field today, didn't get a chance to visit, but Mr. Goose Gossage right here, brother.
Hi, everybody.
And finally, without any introduction necessary, a real gentleman. I've gotten to know him over the last several years. He does so much charity work with his own foundation and for all of us. He's actually had certain days out in Arizona where he'll raise a bunch of money and just give it right to the Respect 90 Foundation. Beyond being a Hall of Fame pitcher, Hall of Fame dude, Mr. Fergie Jenkins.
Thank you. Thank you.
Lee?
Yes, sir.
This is your weekend here in Chicago. We all know that. Has it sunk in yet that you got the plaque in Cooperstown?
Well, man, you know what? When I got there, Billy Williams gave me some great advice, man. He said, you know what? It's not going to sink in until you get in that room, you know, on the waiting for the bus for all of those guys to get, you know, go to Cooperstown, you know. And I'm like, man, that is unbelievable. I was like a kid, man. I was like, I want to get some autographs while I was in that room, man. But I tell you what, it's been a crazy, crazy like year so far for me, but it's been good. I'm enjoying it. Thank you.
For some of us, Lee, that haven't ever been in that room, could you tell us more about what it's like?
Yeah.
Well, I tell you what, it took me 20 years to get there myself, man.
Yeah, but it doesn't go away now. Oh, that's my goodness, man. It doesn't go away.
Hey, I was telling all the guys, I didn't realize how much those three little letters meant. Man, that it's unbelievable. Son. I'm telling you, boy, my God, it's been...
Tell me about it. Don't say you didn't know. Now you know. What does it mean?
It's still trying to sink in, man. It's still getting there. I'm still getting there, man, because you just look at all those guys that, you know, you grew up watching play and you wanted to mimic in the backyard, and I'm sitting in the same room with them. Man, I came from a hometown that didn't have a red light to this day. So I never thought I was going to have an opportunity to be in the town, let alone be in that room.
Well, I got to work with him for that. I think it was just 1 year, right? We just worked together for 1 year with the Angels. But, I mean, he's indicating right now what I knew back then. Listen, I just nothing, man. I carried the balls around. I rubbed them up. I caught some guys in the bullpen, and I shot baskets with him outside the clubhouse door at Toronto, the Blue Jay ballpark out there. But really a humble man. This is no act by any means, man. That's what he was. You were really good to me back then. I always appreciated that, brother.
Well, I tell you what, Joe, I'm really proud of you because now I'm sitting here. I see you can hold your alcohol a little better than you did back then.
Yeah,
I just
turned 21. I was just breaking in at that time.
Oh, come on, Lee, that, we need to hear a little of that.
I took him home a couple of days to lean him against the door. But great
guy,
man.
It's true.
Fergie Goose, when you guys, I mean, there's a lot of saves right in that little area right over there. I'll tell you that. When you guys went into the Hall of Fame, can you tell your story, Fergie? I've heard yours before. It's a great story. Goose, I've never heard yours, but, you know, that's one of those days that everybody puts on a uniform. You want to get to the big leagues, win a World Series, play, have a good career, but then the ultimate, once you get to the big leagues, everybody would love to be a Hall of Famer. Only a select few are good enough to do that. What about you guys?
Well, you know, Jack Lang, he's since passed away, is the individual that phones you and tells you you've been elected in the Hall of Fame. So he phones me Sunday night, says you're one of the top candidates, along with Rod Carew and Gaylord Perry. I won't phone you until Monday if you made it.
And oh, geez.
I'm waiting by the phone, 5 o'clock, no call, 10 after. I told my son Raymond, well, I guess I didn't make it this year. And then the phone rings. He says, congratulations, Ferguson, you're now in the Hall of Fame. So then, second call, I phoned my dad.
Yep.
And told him that I had the opportunity to make the Hall of Fame, and he started crying on the phone. And, you know, it's pretty dramatic because of the fact that it was my third year on the ballot. They put Johnny Bench and Yastrzemski in, and then they took Palmer and Morgan, and I went in with Gaylord Perry and Rod Carew, which was a threesome, which a lot of times then they didn't put three guys in one time. Now they put five or six guys in. Yeah. So I was very fortunate. 91. And to this day, almost 28 years been in the Hall of Fame, and I'm pretty proud of that.
That's awesome.
Goose?
Well, you know, you think about, you meet Hall of Famers in our travels throughout our playing days, and I would meet a Hall of Famer in the clubhouse or wherever on the field outside, and I'd go, Jesus, what must that be like? And, you know, I went in on my ninth year of eligibility, and I told Lee this. I said, the moral of this story is the longer you have to wait for something, the more special it is. And, you know, that was that's how I looked at it. You know, I just kept going, doing whatever I was doing. I never even hung out by the phone. I just figured, I never thought I was ever worthy, really, of the Hall of... I mean, how do we think of ourselves as Hall of Famers? You know, you don't. All you want to do when I first started out was put a big league uniform on one time, and all I wanted to do was put it on one time in the big leagues, and it turns into 22 years and then an election to the Hall of Fame. It's like, I will never comprehend this as long as I live. I will never register.
Hey, Ronnie, you know what? He's right, because I came to the big leagues in 65 when Marvin Miller took over the Player Association in 67. He said, if you could get 5 years in, you could get a pension. That's what I thought about. I wanted to get 5 years
pension.
In. I end up getting almost 19 years in.
You know, hey Ronnie, I want to ask you a question. You know, Fergie just said that, you know, back then they didn't let three guys in, and now they let five or six guys in. JoJo, you think when they get to the point where they let like 9 or 10 guys in, Kuma and I might get that call?
If I get into the Hall of Fame, the Major League Baseball Hall of Fame, let's clarify, I would have been broadcasting for a long damn time, bro. Because it ain't going to be because of that 274 with a couple knocks the other way. That ain't going to get it done.
Broadcasters Hall of Fame. That's
yeah. We got another guy, Pat Hughes, who's got a really good chance of going into the Hall of Fame, my partner. He'll be the one that is going in as a Cub, as a broadcaster. I don't think his partner currently, but he'll go there and watch. But it'll be good.
Yes, sir. Johnny, what do you got, buddy?
It's just like me being a kid in a candy store, seeing four of the greatest pitchers that I grew up with, watching you and Ronnie. I grew up literally grew up with Ronnie, but to have Fergie Jenkins, to have Mr. Gossage and Lee Smith and, you know, Big Red, Mr. Sutcliffe,
Did you it's guys, pretty incredible.
Did you guys think Bruce Sutter was going to show up instead of me?
We thought you were Bruce originally. But, you know, there's a common thread among all you had. Goose, you just talked about it. I would imagine that if you talk to most guys that have entered the Hall of Fame, they'll all tell you the same tale, that they can't believe that they're there, because the whole intent was just to play pro ball, Major League Baseball, put the uniform on. You just went about your business in a professional way for so many years. You were really good. Then eventually end up in the Hall of Fame. But I would believe that there's just a small minority of guys in the Hall of Fame that really, I want to be in the Hall of Fame someday. Your intent was to play, to pitch, and be on winners, and be on championship teams. That was your first agenda, I would imagine, from every one of you guys.
Well, the truth to my story is, a kid from Canada made the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, right, exactly.
The U.S. Hall of Fame. But you know what it was? When I signed in 1962 as an 18-year-old and I became a professional, I wanted to know what it was like to go up against the competition. Mm-hmm. And Willie Mays is one of the idols I always watched on television, or mm-hmm. McCovey, yep. and a lot of these guys. And to see the opportunity for me to get there and then be on the mound and have to face them, my ability against theirs, and I had some success, and it all worked.
I got a great question. Can I ask a question? Like, okay, Goose,
it's
Lee.
It's your restaurant, and, your three show. Guys. You can ask whatever you want.
Who was, like, the one dude, the toughest dude for you to face? Is there any? You probably had one or two guys.
I got to face some great hitters toward the end of their careers, like Tony Oliva. Mm-hmm. I think he belongs in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah,
Henry Aaron, just some great hitters,
right.
Al Kaline, guys like that, who were on the backsides of their careers, and they couldn't catch up with my number one.
100?
But the guy that you know, I told him, I said, I single-handedly got your ass in the Hall of Fame.
Who that?
That was George frickin' Brett. Yeah.
So, that's awesome.
You know, he hit a couple of shots, heard around. I hate that son of a bitch.
There's a really good story and something that happened famous in baseball about that.
Let's go. Yeah.
Can we? No. Can we get that after we take a break?
Yeah,
that is one of the great moments of sports. Maybe not for you, Coach, but for all of us watching, it was the game of the week. Folks, we are here with Rick Sutcliffe, Lee Smith, Rich Goose Gossage, Fergie, Johnny Vincent, and the skipper, Joe Madden. I'm Ron Coomer. You're listening to The Score 670 at Madden's Post.
Now back to Madden's Post, live from Madden's Post at Gallagher Way, starring Cubs manager Joe Madden and your host, Ron Coomer, on Sports Radio 670 The Score, official radio home of the Cubs, a radio.com sports station.
We are here with show number 4, Madden's Post. Rick Sutcliffe, Lee Smith, Goose Gossage, Fergie Jenkins, Johnny Vincent, the skipper Joe Madden. I'm Ron Coomer. And, skipper, we were just talking at the break. You wanted to ask Goose a question.
Well, before I do, can we just finish up the hitters that bothered you the most? Because it had to be somebody that handled the low and away fastball right-handed, because that's the only place you threw the ball.
Yeah, for me, it wasn't. The guy wasn't really a good player, man. But he hit me pretty good. You ever heard of a third baseman named Mike Schmidt?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he used to...
I hated him growing up in Chicago.
I tell you what, me and Sutton, remember we go into the vet, and we walk in, going into the clubhouse, and they're having, like, a thing there for Mike Schmidt. And we look at the wall, and they're, hey, man, you got to be damn good to make the wall here in, at the vet as a visitor. We didn't know it was the guy that hit the most home runs off. Me and Sutton was a Jerry Royce, I think.
It had Mike Schmidt's top 10 all-time pitchers. And it, like, started out with, like a couple of really good guys, and then Lee and I were, like, right behind it. And we should have just left it at that, like, thinking we were good.
Yeah.
But it was the guys that he had hit the most home runs. Joe, I would echo Mike Schmidt was the guy back in the day who, I mean, I saw the Dodgers. They were good, Say and Garvey and Dusty and all them. But nobody could hit a home run with that marine layer to the opposite field.
Well, let me say this, though. He had the opposite of the launch angle swing. He was just a short little choppy thing, all hands. He was never trying to lift the ball from whatever I – is that true?
Well,
that was my observation.
In 1979, why didn't you tell me that?
Well, I mean, with that kind of swing, he's got to be good in the gaps. He had to be good in the gaps with that kind of an approach.
He was good in the gaps when I was a kid watching, but they just ended up in the bleachers. That was the problem.
Okay, let me ask you guys this then.
With the game the way it's played today, you got to have a pet peeve about it somewhere. There's something about the game today that's bothering you. I know I have the same feelings or issues, but I'm curious. I know you guys.
I would like to take this from right here, Joe, because we were in Randy Hundley's fantasy camp, which is one of the best things we've ever done. It's so much fun. And Ed Lynch, a former GM and pitcher for the Cubs, he gave a statistic that year. That's probably been 3 or 4 years ago, 5 years ago. He talked about in all of Major League Baseball, combined that year, they had 30 complete games. And then all of a sudden he goes, and in 19, whatever it was, Fergie Jenkins himself had 31.
Yeah. Okay, that's a great example.
Sammy Koufax was the guy that told me when I was 18 years old, a quality start is when at the end of the game you shake the catcher's hand.
Right.
That's my pet peeve.
Okay. Lee?
That qualifies.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
For myself, the main thing is I think that time clock, you know, for me.
Hey, I was there, buddy.
that time clock, if I came out of the bullpen and they had that, what is it, 2 minutes?
2 minutes to get from the time you left the mound in the pen to you get out of the mound.
Hell, man, I'd get one warm-up hit, dude.
Brother, I can validate this.
Over,
I used to time him. I used to time him from the first step out of a bullpen to the mound. Baltimore, which is like way out in left central, I would watch the moment he threw his last pitch and started walking towards the catcher, 4 minutes. 4 minutes from there to the mound for the Arthur to get there. And I loved it. I used to tell you about that.
Yeah.
Shake
man.
His hand after the game.
Well,
his wrist would crack
Joe,
as you shake
on,
his hand.
Because there was a time when it took Goose longer to get to the mound than that, right?
Really?
Mickey Rivers?
Oh, yeah. Well, through the worst stretch of my whole career was with the Yankees when I joined the Yankees in 78. And I would get to the mound. I'd lose a ball game. I did literally lose a ball game every way I could think of losing a ball game. And the 14 games out that we were out in late July and ended up catching the Red Sox, it was the greatest comeback. On our rings on the inside, Mr. Steinbrenner inscribed the greatest comeback in history. Nobody's come back from that deficit.
But why were you guys 14
and
games
so,
behind?
The only reason we were 14 games out, give me a chance, asshole.
Beep.
I was kind of hoping for that. I kind of
did I say that? I said, it was my horrendous start that dug us that deep hole. And I would get to the mound, and Munson would ask me, this one particular day going through this.
Do we need to get the 5 second beeper out again?
I'd already know.
Okay, just check.
So about five, I come into the game and man, I'm losing every game every way. And Munson looks up at me. Billy hands me Martin hands me the ball. He goes, "How are you going to lose this one?" I couldn't believe what he was asking me. I said, and now he's running away laughing. And I'm screaming at him. Going, I don't know. Get your ass back there. We'll find out, okay? I want to kill him, you know?
But, that is beautiful,
but,
man.
But, you know, Thurman, you know, Mickey Rivers, this one particular time in this stretch, I come into inherited runners. And I stand on the – I look in for the sign. I do this three times. After the third time, I stepped off because Munson's laughing.
Yeah.
All these three times, and I'm going, this is not a laughing matter.
Right, yeah.
This is not a laughing situation, you know? And finally, after the third time, he comes out, he calls timeout, he comes out, he goes, what? I said, what? I said, what are you laughing at? He goes, check Rivers out. I turned around and look at Mickey Rivers, my center fielder, and he's in a sprint position. All I can see is his butt propped up, facing, and his head. He
the outfield wall?
The outfield wall. I said, that little SOB. But, yeah.
In a big league ball game in Yankee Stadium.
Yeah, and then finally I they stuck with me. It was the worst. It's the only time the game really has ever brought me to my knees where I felt like quitting. I felt like, you know, really, I was at my wit's end. The harder I tried, the worse it got. And that was why Munson was trying to lighten up the Yeah. The atmosphere.
How many years did you play after that? How many years?
Okay,
this is a great example.
I think that's a great example of how Final Line, winning and losing, and success and and non, you
and
know,
being a great player, but it just doesn't always work out.
It doesn't. You know, I tell little kids, I said, hey, people ask me, hey, Goose, how are you such a great reliever? I said, I couldn't remember what happened last night. So a short memory is a beautiful thing.
Ferg?
Well, the new thing now is the pitch count. Yeah. And that five innings quality start.
Can I ask you something right here?
How about that 500 quality starts?
Why do you think you guys are able to throw so many more? Because you did? Why were you able to throw so many more pitches per game?
I ran all the time. I threw in between starts. And
when did you throw in between starts? I had Warren Spahn as a pitcher.
My second day.
Okay. Did you ever throw BP before your next start? Did you guys?
Well, that's
ever,
what I mean. I threw to the extra men
on the field.
Yes.
That was your work day.
That was my work
day. That's what Spahnie liked. I had Spahnie as a minor league pitching coach when I was a young manager in Idaho Falls in 1981. And Spahnie wanted you pitch, day off, BP, day off, 5 minutes on the side, and then pitch.
Yeah.
That was Spahnie's method.
You're talking about.
Is that right? Is that what
you're talking about? The great left-hander. You're talking about Warren.
Weirdly, I mean, listen, I'm talking to these guys now.
Joe Becker was a pitching coach with the Cubs.
Yeah, okay.
And he had the routine of Kenny Holzman, Bill Hands, myself, Rich Nye, and later on Selma. That's how we threw with a four-man rotation.
What did you do? Were you able to do that on the road also or just at home?
Yes.
That's great.
I did on the road, but I ran all the time. We ran line to line back and forth from right field to left field. I stayed in shape 20 a day. And Joe Becker was the kind of guy that said, if you can't run, you can't pitch on his staff.
Well, okay. Well, that's interesting to me because, like Sutta just talked about, the number of complete games and what goes on today. I mean, it's a different method. I'm not saying what's right and what's wrong. It's different. But I do believe if you want kids to do that, they have to do that in the minor leagues also.
Well,
if you ever want to see that ever come back.
Yeah, I started in AA, AAA. Okay. But when I got to the big leagues, my first really pitching coach was Cal McClish. You know the
Cal,
name.
Yeah, yeah.
And Cal said, if you got to do it, you got to do it the right way. And that's the theory everybody had, all the pitching coaches, and you just did it.
I know. I mean, listen, it was a simpler time in a lot of ways. And you know, people argue even today with the way pitchers are dealt with. A lot of it has to do with making money, too. You're afraid of hurting people.
Right.
So you're really being cautious. You get this real wonderful commodity. You don't want to overuse them to the point where – I mean, you're talking about his career also as a moneymaker as well as the organization.
In the 60s, I don't think we had an arm injury from Sutton, Marichal, Gibson, myself, Seaver.
Did you guys conceal them more often because you did not want to go in? I mean, seriously, I mean, you weren't getting paid the same amount of money back then, so did you have to conceal injuries?
Knock on wood, I never had a sore arm in 21 seasons.
You know, something that I think is really killing pitchers today is the no windup.
Okay.
You're not engaging big muscles to throw the baseball with. When you come up over your head, you can feel the big lats. You can feel the big muscles getting a turn.
Plus deception also.
It does.
And intimidation.
Well, the two things that the intimidation. Mm-hmm.
That's where you were.
This deception. This front side, this glove side. Mm-hmm. I teach little kids this. Wind up. Man, they did it for 100 years. And you don't think those old-timers knew what the hell they were doing?
Spahnie was all about the windup.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You get a momentum going. You get a momentum going and some power and your body and your mass going behind every pitch. These kids are starting from a dead standstill. You want to throw darts or do you want to maximize your fastball? I don't care if you throw 89.
But that's
you want to throw 91.
Right.
You know, I'm just saying, and deception.
Juan Marichal.
This front side.
I love the front side, man. It's all about it, absolutely.
But it does two things. It creates deception, and it creates leverage to pull against.
Correct.
You tie your glove side. You guys out there with kids, have your son tie his glove to his side and throw a baseball.
Doesn't work.
The more you use this front side, it does two things. It creates leverage, and it creates deception from the hitter. People used to look at me and go, man, where's the ball coming out of? You know, it was all arms, legs, and kind of like...
It's an uncomfortable at bat, totally uncomfortable at bat.
Absolutely, and now these hitters are so comfortable up there by a lot of reasons, because hitters are protected today. We were just talking about it. An older generation hitter used to, first thing he used to think about when he came into that box was, I might have to dodge this goddamn thing. The last thing these hitters think about today is, I might have to dodge a pitch.
That's right.
Because they're protected. And you know what? It's more dangerous that way, just like second base and shortstop. Mm-hmm. They, you know, you can't go in there barreling in and take. They're going to let their guard down, and somebody's going to come in and clean their clock. And these other guys, when we played, you knew the guys that were going to kill you or try.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You know, so, you know, there's a lot of things in the game. You know, Joe, getting back to your money thing, you can't let money dictate how you train. You can, just like a great racehorse.
Right.
They train the hell out of racehorses, mm-hmm. right? To run that mile and a half, right? Pitchers are no different than racehorses. You've got to train us. And I'll tell you what, the nerds that are running this game are turning the players into nerds.
Sly, what do you think? Let's put Sut on the spot right here. Come on, Sut, what do you got? Come on,
how about this? We are going to take a break on Goose's comment. I'm getting Sut off the hook.
That's the base save of my career right there,
you're
Ronnie.
You're welcome right there. We are at Madden's Post. Rick Sutcliffe, Lee Arthur Smith, Goose Gossage, the Reverend, Fergie Jenkins, Johnny Vincent, the Skipper, I'm Rod Coomer. We got some more 84 Cubs coming up. We are at Madden's Post, and you're listening to The Score on 670.
Hey everyone, Boomer Esiason here. The NFL Draft is behind us and your favorite team is now gearing up for week number one. The free Odyssey app puts you right in the middle of the pro football conversation with the biggest sports radio stations from across the country. The local voices who know your team the best, giving you their unfiltered takes on the current state of your squad. It's always football season right here on the free Odyssey app.